Batter Up. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 87 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Sarovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Hello.
So we have a lot to cover on the show this week. Somewhat surprisingly, I just feel like a lot came up. So a lot has happened with the Mets since we last talked about the Mets. Obviously, last week we did not discuss the Mets much because we had Dr. Meredith Wills on to discuss the baseballs. We spent most of our time on that. In the meantime, while we were discussing baseballs, the Mets have somehow continued to roll. The bench mob.
Good.
The bench mob has done its job, despite the fact that the last time that we talked about the Mets, that even since the last time we talked about the Mets, when we went through the injuries at length, they continued to grow since that time, and it peaked at 17 players on the injured list, I believe.
Yeah.
Since, in addition to all the injuries that we discussed at length a couple of weeks ago, Jhenasree Farkas sprained his AC joint, crashing into the wall. So that forced the Mets to pick up Cameron Maybin, who only got one hit as a Met before he was designated for assignment. The Mets were on, like, center fielder number, like, 7 at this point.
Oof. I think so, yeah.
Like, and you think there'd be more issues there since they're on number however many.
Yeah. But. Like the outfield at the point that Jhenasree Farkas was injured, it basically the outfield situation became so dire that they had to start seeking help from outside the organization. So they did that. They acquired Cameron Maybin for literally $1, but Cameron Maybin has since been unceremoniously designated for assignment because it turns out that he can't really be a Major League Baseball player anymore. But they also traded for outfielder Billy McKinney from the Brewers, who has performed much better so far, as in, like, actually looks like a Major League Baseball player, which is apparently the bar now. But yeah, he actually, like, has hit the ball sometimes. So that is an improvement. But yeah, the replacement.
And he plays a solid defense too, McKinney. Yes. I saw that live and up close and personal.
Yes, he plays a good defense. He's very good. And he hasn't had much chance to play center with the Brewers, and he's getting shots in the corners and in center with the Mets. So that's good. And he will probably continue to stick around for a little while, at least until they get, like, all their guys healthy.
If they get all their guys healthy,
which is a really, really big if. But the replace Mets are still somehow 26-20. And along with the White Sox and the AL Central, they have the largest divisional lead in baseball at 3.5 games. That is mostly being carried by their pitching, which has been absolutely phenomenal, despite the fact that both Noah Syndergaard and Carlos Carrasco have had setbacks now, although they're not calling the Carlos Carrasco setback a setback, whatever. I think obviously the Carrasco setback wasn't really news, even as of the last time we recorded, but the Syndergaard setback was. So we were expecting Syndergaard sometime this month, basically. Now it is now June. We are recording this on June 1st. We were expecting Syndergaard back this month, but then, you know, in his latest rehab outing, all of a sudden, elbow soreness, which is not good if you're coming back from Tommy John surgery. That's generally
and the velocity was way down too.
Velocity way down.
Especially after starting, so like at 97, 98, I think.
Yep. All the red flags. And an MRI revealed elbow inflammation, no structural damage, but he will be shut down until the inflammation subsides, which is about 6 weeks. So he won't be back until at least July, if not later. So that's not great. But their pitching has carried them. Both DeGrom and Walker are now back off the injured list, and both have continued to pitch very well. Stroman, all three of DeGrom, Stroman, and Walker are top 15 in the National League in ERA. All of them have ERAs like under 2.5, basically. I think Stroman's is like 2.47.
And Walker and DeGrom are top 5.
Yeah, Walker and DeGrom are top 5. Stroman's ERA is like 2.47. Walker's ERA is like 1.8, and DeGrom's is like 0.7.
Something absurd.
Grom's is video games numbers.
Video game numbers, as usual. So it's like, when, I mean, obviously it's not great that your other two, like, really good starting pitchers are not back for a while, but, like, their top three starters have been excellent, like, beyond what anyone ever could have expected from any of them. And, you know, Peterson's been what a fifth starter is. I mean, Peterson's the fourth starter right now, but that said, like, Peterson's been good sometimes and been not so good other times, but it's like, this is all he needs to be if the Mets are at full capacity, right? Like, this is really what you would expect from him. You can't expect much more than that. It's just that he's the fourth starter right now, and Joey Lucchese's been fine, but they generally have to do bullpen games when he pitches, but the bullpen has been excellent.
And Lucchese's been much better the past two outings. I think he's only given up one run in his past two outings, and he's honestly looked fine. I mean, he's been a little shaky, but it's not like he's completely fallen apart. And, you know, he offers them a different look, too. Like, you know, you have Jake, the power pitcher, Stroman, the ground ball pitcher. I don't even know what Walker is, because he's not in power either.
Yeah, he's more of a contact guy, but he throws harder than Stroman.
Than Stroman, yeah.
He's a healthy mix.
Yeah.
Just go with that.
Yeah, so they each kind of have their own, they're all, like, doing their own thing, so. So I think he's fine.
Which I think is great against opponents.
Yeah.
Just because that's players on opposing teams have to prep for all different scenarios, more stuff they need to know.
And obviously, you know, Peterson and Lucchese are left-handed, so that also helps, like, shake it up a little bit.
The Churv.
I mean, the rotation's been solid, despite the fact that Syndergaard and Carrasco remain out.
I think their team ERA is like 2.9 or something.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The last time I checked for the season, so I know, because obviously I do the weekly meters for Mason Avenue every week, so I tend to look up team stats for the week and where they rank in baseball, both in hitting and in pitching for each week. I know for this past week, which doesn't include yesterday's game, Monday's game, this includes last Monday through Sunday, which includes two rainouts, but basically the one Braves game and the Rockies series. Over that span, their ERA was like 1.7, and it was second best in baseball. Wow. And I think they've consistently been top three in baseball in team ERA in 2021, basically, week to week. So, yeah, they've been really good. And the bullpen's been amazing. Like, really, really good.
Like, I don't think anybody expected the bullpen to be this good.
No, everybody thought it was a question mark going in.
Everyone did. And the bullpen is improved now, because Seth Lugo has returned from the injured list. So that's a huge weapon. My man's is back. I'm very excited. That's a huge weapon they now have in their arsenal back, which is awesome. Because
But
I was going to say,
the Mets starting pitchers have allowed only 69 runs in 2021. Good for a major league leading 2.72 ERA.
Love to see it.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yep.
That's a nice number.
Nice one.
It's a nice number. We like that.
That is a very nice number.
But yeah, so Seth Lugo is back, and Sean Reed Foley, who had actually been pitching pretty good, has been sent to the minors. He was kind of the odd man out, but, like, he had options, you know. This is exactly what you do when you have a deep bullpen. You have optionable arms that you bring up and down when you need them. And that's what the Mets have done. And it's really good that they now have this guy who they know they can depend on in long relief down in Syracuse, in Sean Reed Foley. Which is really good. And Seth Lugo, they now have not only another guy who can pitch in high leverage along with May, Castro, and Diaz, and Familia at times, but they have a guy who can go multiple innings in that role, which is a huge weapon. So the bullpen is like, it's gone from being the biggest question mark heading into 2021 to, I would argue, the team's biggest strength at this time.
I mean, not to,
for the most,
we'll get too ahead of myself, but you know, I went to the game, the doubleheader against the Rockies, and it was one. The first game was 1-0, I have to say, and I get it's the Rockies, but I have to say it was kind of nice not being nervous having Diaz come in. It's like, game over. It's fine. Like, when was the last time you felt confident when your closer was coming in?
I mean, yeah. he was pulling it together last year.
Yeah.
I can't even say the second half. But then again, like I said it earlier in our Slack chat that I don't put much stock in any of the 2020 stats, like good or bad. So there were signs of him coming out of his terrible 2019. So, and he's showing that this year. Yeah, very, very well.
Yeah, he's elite now.
He can he's be been elite closer than he was.
Yep, he's perfect.
And also, he had Narco return. I totally put stock in the fact that Narco has returned as his walk-on song.
I've been debating about writing an article about his numbers
pre-Narco,
with Narco.
I mean, yeah, that, like, not Narco versus Narco. Narco.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth looking into, I think.
I agree. In addition
I mean,
to...
it's a silly thing, but it's
fun.
It's very
such
fun.
A good song.
And also, we know how superstitious ball players are, yes, so maybe exactly. It was a mental thing. Who knows?
In addition to Seth Lugo being activated from the injured list, Pete Alonso and Kevin Pillar were both activated from the injured list. And
yeah,
and Mason Williams was called up from the minors. And so as a corresponding move, Cameron Maben, like I mentioned, was designated for assignment along with Sam McWilliams to make 40-man space. And Sean Reed Foley, Patrick Mazika, and Khalil Lee were all optioned. And so the team has like instantly improved this week by like a significant margin. I mean, as much as we love Colt hero Patrick Mazika, carrying three catchers is not exactly a sustainable formula. I mean, it did allow them to play James McCann at first base while Pete Alonso was still out, which was good because it allowed for like basically Nito and McCann to both be in the lineup at the same time because two of the only like actual major league bats they had happened to be both their catchers. So it was helpful for that. But like now that Alonso is back playing first base every day, you don't really need three catchers anymore. So yeah, but like, you know, replacing Reed Foley, Mazika, and Lee with Lugo, Pillar, and Alonso is like a big, pretty big upgrade.
And the fact that Pillar was one of the first ones back is pretty amazing.
Truly incredible.
Pillar is still terrifying me that he's back, like 2 weeks, I think 2 weeks after he got hit.
I mean, he's fine. It's just a broken nose.
I mean, like, yeah, like, as long as you're wearing the protective mask, like, outside of getting hit in the face again, like there's really not much he can do to re-injure it.
Yeah,
it's not like a quad where like if you run then you can re-aggravate it.
And
as like, long as he's can like he said, as long as he can breathe and see, which it seems like he can, he's good.
Yeah,
and like you don't need your face to swing a bat.
No point.
Oh, you need your eyes.
You need
but
your
you don't
eyes.
Need your nose.
And that was the whole thing I was concerned about was his eyesight. Yeah. That ball hit him flush on the face. Oh, it's my God.
I guess the nose did what it was supposed to do and took the brunt of it and protected the eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like when it swelled, that was when he couldn't see. But now that the swelling is down,
yeah,
it seems he's okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, somebody pointed this out on Twitter, too, and I noticed it, that I want to say it was Gelbs, how Jake, you know, just gives very Jake answers. Like, he doesn't reveal too much. But he was very animated talking about Pillar last night. And it was, like, one of the rare times you saw him, like, really, you know, speak very highly of it. I mean, he always speaks highly of his teammates, but he was, you know, really gushing about Pillar yesterday, which is very rare from Jake.
Yes.
So I think that kind of speaks to how the rest of the team views him too.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, that's been his whole career, that he has that tough reputation.
Yeah, Stroman Ola loved him in Toronto.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes,
he was
really
psyched when the Mets signed him, I remember.
Yeah.
Stroman was, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I like, obviously it's hard not to feel good about the Mets right now. They've built up, you know, a little bit of a division lead here, despite the fact that like half their team's on the injured list, more than half. But for the most part, in order like tempering our, you know, our like excitement, Mets are World Series bound excitement a little bit. Not to say that like the Mets haven't been good, because they have been, but they've been able to take advantage against bad teams mostly because they've played a lot in division. And as we know, the entire NL East is a trash fire.
They're all under 500.
They're all under 500 besides the Mets. Yes. And the Rockies, and then they played the Rockies, who are really bad, and they're playing the Diamondbacks right now, who are really bad. And they will not be playing those teams forever. Eventually, right after the Diamondbacks series, they'll be facing off against the Padres, which will be a huge test for them, because the Padres are a very good baseball team. So we'll see what happens. I mean, like, the Mets have built up enough of a division lead where, like, you know, if the Padres clean their clocks a little bit, it won't be a disaster for their standing in the NL East. But
if you look at all of June, outside of a couple series, they're playing mostly the NL East for the entire month.
Yes, they're playing a lot of NL East games again in June. They're playing the Padres, and I think
the Cubs, the Orioles,
who are good now. The Cubs are good now. Which actually, the last time they played the Cubs, I mean, the Cubs swept them. So
when they were bad,
when they were bad, and now the Cubs are good. We'll see what happens during this stretch of the schedule. Hopefully the Mets won't hit a June swoon. I mean, they have, like I said, the cavalry is coming. Some guys have been activated, but it's hard to say, like, beyond this first glut of guys. Like, we knew that Alonso, Pilar, and Lugo were close, and so they've all come back now. But, like, who's the next guy? Like, every single other guy is, like, pretty far away or has had some sort of setback. Like,
I don't know what's going on with my mans.
JD is not okay.
It's so mysterious.
It's mysterious and it's weird.
Yeah, they're not.
They keep saying he's swinging a bat, then he's not swinging a bat, then he's rehabbing, then he's not rehabbing, then he got sent to New York.
And they did the same freaking thing they did with Carrasco, where they're like, he's, you know, he's not back in his rehab assignment, but it's not a setback. And it's one of those, like, my not a setback t-shirt has people asking a lot of questions about my shirt situations. Like,
I just want my man's back.
Stop saying it's not a setback if it's a setback. Like, you don't have to say anything.
Swinging. It's fine.
Like, you don't have to say not a setback. You could just not say anything. But instead, they're like, we promise it's not a setback. It's like, that makes me really think it's a setback.
Yeah, like, now I'm starting to think that it is a setback.
Like, yes. I don't understand. So, like, JD is, like, mysteriously dead in a way that we don't understand.
It feels like a little JD Davis. Jed Lowry.
The little Jed Lowry.
No, I hope it's not that bad. It's just a hand. Not
I
a
hope
whole
not
body.
Either, because I would like to think if he needs surgery, they'll let him go get it, unlike Jed Lowry, who they
dropping the mic. Kellyanne's out here dropping the mic on the pod,
literally.
I don't think it's gonna be like that situation, but like, both JD Davis and Brandon Nimmo like hurt themselves swinging the bat, and now they're like months, like they're gonna be out for months for some reason. Like, I'm just like, what is happening? And Brandon Nimmo has this mysterious like nerve issue in his finger that it turns out was aggravated by his like bruise or whatever he had. And so like, he's still not swinging. JD has a mysterious not setback setback, and like Guillorme is probably next, because they said he's going on a rehab assignment.
Guillorme and Almora, I think.
And Almora, so like, they might come back. And then, but then like, Jeff McNeil was taking grounders like before the game the other day, but like, they haven't said anything about like him starting a rehab assignment. He was literally just like the first steps of baseball activities, and Conforto is not doing squat. So like, they may not, they've gotten a glut of reinforcements, but it may be a while until the next wave.
Well, hopefully they can hold it down until then.
Yep. Hopefully guys like Billy McKinney and Brandon Drury continue to like be amazing. And like, Jonathan VR continues to be like a legitimate everyday third baseman somehow. Like, that's what they got to keep doing if they can hope to win games.
I mean,
I love it.
If we could have survived like the past 2 weeks with like not even a full lineup. Like you were basically like
we are patching the leaks there.
Yeah, like I've never seen anything like that. And you know, everybody like Rojas is not a good in-game manager whatsoever, but you know, credit to him for this team not completely, you know, collapsing, which it very easily could have.
Yeah, there's more than one person saying that Rojas is like a manager of the year candidate, which like, listen, I don't necessarily agree with that because I don't think he's actually good at managing, but like, is there a manager who's really good at on-field managing? There aren't that many managers that are good at that.
Good.
No.
So
I think maybe what positively can be said about him is that he is hands-off and trusts his players to kind of work things out themselves, which seems to, again, this is entire speculation on my part, because it seems to be working out because the team is doing well. The team supports each other. I mean, they're the online members of the team just go crazy supporting each other and defending each other and being generally silly and fun with each other. So maybe that hands-off approach, he's taking a hands-off approach that's working. Maybe.
Who knows? But ride the wave while it lasts, because the point is they need to build up this lead while they're playing bad teams and hold on against good teams. That's just the way it has to be until like August, when guys are back for real. Like, you just need to keep yourselves in it during this time, and then hopefully you're healthy for the real stretch run.
Like, I was hoping for them to play 500 baseball, and they've done better than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we can laugh and say they were beating up bad teams, but you look at the Mets.
That's what you have to do.
But you look at the Mets lineup, they very easily could have been a bad team.
That's the whole thing. That's the other thing that cracks me up. We're on our third and fourth string here.
We're on our fifth or sixth center fielder, for God's sake.
Yeah,
we had a catcher playing first base.
Which I think is pretty mortifying for the other teams.
Yeah.
But like, I think that speaks highly to the depth they have brought in and that they're doing well too.
Well, I think it actually, I mean, I don't know if you saw the Ken Rosenthal tweet, like the Mets are second to last in runs scored. So in the major leagues, they're just above the Pirates. So yeah. I think it's a credit to the pitching more than anything.
For the most part. And yes. I mean, like, so it's interesting because like everyone will say similar things about like, oh, we're like, our team's really injured too. And it's true. We've mentioned on previous episodes of the podcast, the injuries are insane this year. They're up across the league. Like every team is dealing with this to a certain extent, but a really illustrative graphic, and I recently posted it on Twitter, a really illustrative graphic came out about this on Fangraphs recently. Fangraphs wrote an article about the injuries, and they posted a graphic of basically a bar chart of for each team, like all the teams were on the x-axis and the y-axis was projected WAR on the injured list, and the Mets were far and away the most. So like, even if other teams might have just as many players hurt or like around the same neighborhood as a number of players hurt as the Mets, the Mets have by far the most important players hurt.
Yes.
And at the time that the article was written, DeGrom was not on the injured list. So like, this was minus DeGrom, whose projected WAR is probably the most of any Met. And he did spend some time on the injured list, although not an extended stint, he did spend some time. And so the Mets had like close to 20 projected WAR on the injured list. Now, that is obviously an imperfect stat, and we can go into all the various ways in which these are imperfect guesstimates, because obviously FWAR is flawed in and of itself. And like, these are simply projections. They're not actual numbers. As far as like the 2021 season, we don't know those yet. So it could be that Michael Conforto wouldn't have had a good season overall, and it doesn't matter. But like, so these are flawed estimates, but at the same time, it's still like, as a big picture thing, is very, very telling of like how much the Mets have had to deal with this year.
Yes, and going back to what Linda was saying about like the pitching being why this team is holding it together, I would also like to make mention of the defense.
Yeah,
which has been much improved.
So much improved to the point where we're saying it's good. That's such a refreshing change.
I saw a stat where they were like second in the league in defensive runs saved, I think.
And that's wild. It's nice to see that defense has become a priority, because in past years it clearly was not. So, and that has so obviously helped them saving runs and just making these Lindor has been making just gorgeous plays.
Oh wait, I found it from Matthew Brownstein. I think he writes for Mets Mesmerized.
Yes.
The Mets and Nationals are tied for the second most defensive run saved DRS in the National League at +24. The Padres are first at +34.
Yeah.
Truly.
So yeah, they're one of the best in the league. And I mean, like, they were probably last or close to last year.
Yeah. Like,
and in previous years.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, I can think of so many errors and goofy plays and,
well, just the positioning was just awful.
Positioning, but even speed, reaction time, arm ability. It's just like Lindor is as smooth as butter. He's so quick on the button.
Him and Peraza are incredible up the middle.
Yeah, they're really good. And VR has been fantastic at third.
Yeah, he's been a lot better than I thought.
He's been a lot better than I thought.
And Pete Alonso's first base defense has improved too.
Improved massively. And I think that before he went down, Nimmo had improved in center field a lot.
Yeah.
I think the positioning, I mean, I think with guys like Francisco Lindor is going to be good no matter what your positioning is. He's extremely athletic. He's a great shortstop. He's just an elite level defensive shortstop. But I think that so much of this other, like the other improvements, and Pete Alonso has clearly like worked really hard at his defense, but I think a lot of these improvements do come from positioning, like realizing that Brandon Nimmo can go in on balls, but he can't really go back on them. So like, play deeper. Like, that makes a lot of sense. And like the Mets, I think I mentioned this on a previous show, and I don't know if it's still true, but I imagine it still is. But at the time I mentioned it last time, I think the Mets were like second in the league in like making outs when the shift is on, or like they were the best at shifting, like the percentage of like runs saved by the shift or something like that. They were one of the best teams at shifting. Sorry that I don't remember the actual measurement that was being used, but they were most successful teams at shifting.
That the guys that they... Oops, there goes my mic now.
Now you have to drop yours.
Yeah. The guys that they did call up or pick up were all good defensively. So, yes. Like, even if they weren't hitting, they were still contributing.
Yeah. It does help
exactly.
That,
Lee made a little incredible catches in the outfield.
Yes.
And Fargus.
It's like...
Yes, Fargus too.
I just want Lee to get the offense together, because he was like wonderful to watch in the field.
He really was. I mean, I still have faith in Lee.
I mean, and
he got that game winning hit in Miami, he was like beaming in the post game conference.
That was very,
I was so
very
happy
adorable.
For him. Yeah.
Him, Lindor, and Walker are the Smiles Club to me
yes.
right now.
Yeah. I mean, he just needs more seasoning. Like, he's just clearly not ready. And he's 22.
Yeah.
He's a baby.
He'll be ready. Like, I'm not worried, but right now he shouldn't be in the major leagues.
No.
But yeah, so like,
thank you for that one, big hit, Lee, cuz he did. He won them that game.
Yes.
So,
yep, thanks for the memories.
And those spectacular defensive plays.
Yes.
I can't wait to see you back up.
Yes. And yeah, this team's strength has been its pitching, and that's been that's been amplified by the defense, which has come through for its pitchers, which is good to see. So yeah, we'll see what happens when the Mets hit June, which has historically been a tough month for this team.
June swoon.
Yeah, let's hope this is the year we don't have a June swoon. We'll see.
I mean, if they don't, then you might as well just start printing the playoff tickets now.
Seriously.
Considering everything else they've been through, if this team can get through a non-June swoon, I might start believing.
Yeah, if they can survive June, then we'll feel like they're for real.
There's hope.
I mean, also, if you look at the loss column, I think the Phillies are like six back in the loss column.
Yes, the Mets in the loss column, because the Mets have played so many fewer games than everybody else.
It's like 9 or 10.
Yeah, it's a lot now, especially because they got two games banged over the weekend. So like, it's been even worse now. So like, and they still haven't really made up their games that got canceled at the beginning of the season. Like, that's why there's that doubleheader in June against the Nationals in DC, because those games at the opening of the season were canceled and they still haven't really made them up. So like, the Mets have played like 9 games fewer than everybody else.
Yes.
So, but if you look at the loss column, the Mets are actually like tied among all the like best teams in baseball.
Yeah. Like I'm looking at the NL East. Braves 26 losses, Phillies 29, Marlins 28, Nationals 29.
Yep.
And the Mets are what, 20?
20.
Yeah, 20. Yeah.
They're 26 and 20. So,
wow.
Loss column is like even more.
I think that cushion between the Mets and the Braves right now says it all. They're 3.5 games ahead.
Yep. It's awesome.
And the Braves at least all have issues. Oh, they have no pitching.
Yeah, they kind of fell apart.
No pitching. They can hit a ton, but no pitching.
Among other things.
We've seen the Phillies a lot, and we've seen their issues. Then at least
Wheeler.
Yeah, Zach Wheeler's great. The rest
who
of the
is
team,
elite.
Not so much. Even Aaron Nola is not pitching well right now. The NL East is a very flawed division. Every team is flawed in some capacity.
And the Nationals are just, I don't know what's going on with them.
Woof. Well, Strasburg is hurt again.
Yep. But was this his first game back?
No.
Oh, okay.
He'd been off the IL for a few starts, I think, because he's on my fantasy team. So going to have to address that, too. Cool.
Strasburg. Sorry, I have to. Strasburg exited in the second inning.
Yes, he did. He's hurt again.
Oof.
Well, yeah, they said his velocity was way, way down. He was shaking his arm. So it didn't sound good.
Like, he didn't gut through it, pretty much. Oh my god, a mess!
Yeah, Steven Strasburg's career makes me sad. It's a shame.
Hey, he still has a World Series ring.
That's what I was going to say. He has a ring. David Wright doesn't. I don't feel that bad.
Yeah, neither do I.
And also, it was karma for them sitting him that one in, what was it, 2012.
Yeah,
it was like the curse of Strasburg, because
when they were like, we're going to protect his health, and he got hurt anyway, and then they didn't win.
Yeah. And yeah, and then it seemed like it was the curse of Strasburg. Like, that was their one chance, but
it wasn't.
That all went out the window.
Yep. News relevant to this podcast. Every week we had our Mickey Callaway still has a job segment.
Finally.
Put that segment to bed, because Mickey Callaway no longer has a job.
Not only that, he's on the ineligible list.
He is on the ineligible list. So MLB finally finished its rather lengthy investigation, which it began in early February. It is now June 1st, so we're talking like almost 4 months. Finished its investigation into Callaway's conduct and concluded that, quote, Mr. Callaway violated MLB's policies and that placement on the ineligible list is warranted. So Callaway has indeed been placed on the ineligible list through the end of the 2022 season, at which point he can apply for reinstatement if he wants. And we will see what happens there, if he tries to.
Will.
Yeah,
I'm sure he will.
I mean, he still never admitted he did anything wrong.
Obfuscating. There we go. Like post or statement. Where
he did, and he admitted nothing. Yeah, he basically claimed ignorance. Like, oh, I didn't know that was wrong.
Yeah, he basically was like, "Ooh, wait, sexual harassment's wrong. Didn't know that."
Like, I've got to plead ignorance on my part.
Like, what the hell? Dude, seriously. But like, so,
I forget who I saw. Somebody tweeted, they're like, if that's true, if he genuinely believes in his whole heart that what he did nothing wrong, that that speaks to a higher culture in MLB that says this is fine.
Well, yeah, that's which exactly is not it. Incorrect. And yeah. We've talked about that many times. We talked about that when Sandy Alderson acts like the Athletic asking him questions about the Mets culture is wasting his time. He thinks it's wasting his time because he doesn't think any of these things are bad.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand that because these things are widely accepted in Major League Baseball. So, but, you know, at least there's this. And he was then, obviously, once he was placed on the ineligible list, the Angels had no choice but to fire him. But they did fire him. Real profiles and courage there. But they did. And so he no longer has a job. But on a related note, we learned this week that the Major League Baseball investigation into the harassment case involving ex-Met GM Jared Porter has reached, quote, the final stages, with a decision and announcement expected within a week or two. Obviously, people weren't necessarily waiting with as bated breath for that investigation because the Mets actually did the right thing and fired Porter right away. But obviously he's not on the ineligible list. He could have still been hired by some other team if some other team wanted to hire him. So they're still, obviously he's still subject to investigation by MLB, and they have done that. So you know, all of these things that should have wrapped up a long time ago, because we have all the receipts for all of it, are now wrapping up. So we will hear soon about Jared Porter, and we'll see what happens there, and we'll have it for you when it does. So, but on the heels of, I guess, good news, came more bad news. It's like every time we take a step forward with any of this, we have to talk about more men being trash. So here we are. Before I go into this segment of the podcast, a quick content warning. We're going to discuss issues of domestic violence. We're going to discuss a particular incident of domestic violence. If you do not want to listen to any of the details of said incident, you can skip forward ahead a little bit past this segment. But so we learned over the weekend on Saturday that Braves outfielder Marcell Ozuna was arrested on charges of aggravated assault, strangulation, and misdemeanor battery, family violence. He will now be investigated under the provisions of the joint MLB Players Association domestic violence policy and subject to a suspension. So after his arrest, the Braves released the following statement. We learned of Marcell Ozuna's arrest earlier this evening and immediately informed the commissioner's office. The Braves fully support Major League Baseball's policy on domestic violence, which stresses to the fullest that our society cannot and will not tolerate domestic violence in any form. Until the investigation is completed, we will have no further comment, and all inquiries into the matter should be referred to the office of the commissioner. So,
what makes this different, I think, is also the police witnessed it.
Yes, that's really the big difference on this one.
So they can move forward even if his wife decides not to press charges, which yes. happens a lot in these cases. So,
yeah, in a situation, I mean, it's different in every state, but in Georgia, which is where he was arrested, in a situation where his wife decides not to press charges or decides not to cooperate or move forward, basically the state takes over the case and decides whether charges should be brought against him. And in this case,
usually in the case of enough evidence, yeah,
they will bring charges most likely because the police witnessed the assault, which, yeah, you know, the police report is out there for you to see, and it contains graphic details of what occurred. You can go seek that out if you want.
There's also video, or maybe it's just a photo, but I think it's a video of him being arrested.
There's it a was photo just of a him photo. Being
okay, well, it's yeah. just a photo. Okay.
There's no, I would say, thankfully, there's no video of the actual incident.
No.
But the police report contains a graphic description of what occurred in the incident. And let's just say
they do wear body cams, so I'm sure there is video somewhere.
But I'm not sure
that's not going to be released.
No.
So yeah, hope. it's ugly. It was tough to read. I'm not going to read it on the podcast, but you can Google it. It's there if you want to read it, but it's tough. It's a tough read. He was released from jail on a $20,000 bond yesterday with an order of no contact from his wife. So that's the latest situation with him. According to reports, this began as an argument over marital infidelity, and he allegedly threatened to kill her, which geez. Is really scary. And this couple like has a past history of this. Ozuna's wife was arrested in 2020 for striking Ozuna in the face with a soap dish. So like, she was also arrested once. Like, people kept saying, like, she's also done stuff. Yeah, and she was also arrested. Like, you know.
She suffered it's consequences.
Punishment for it, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, consequences for the stuff you do.
I mean, this is just sounds like, again, this is from an outsider's perspective, this sounds like a toxic couple all around.
Very yeah. unhealthy relationship. Not a
And you just hope the kids are
Yeah, like, they safe. Have kids. They have yes. three kids, right?
Yeah.
Christ. So yeah, I mean, like, not only suspend this man, but like launch him directly into the sun. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
No. But
launch this man into the sun.
There was an article, I think, from The Athletic saying it's kind of complicated because you can't just void the contract.
Right.
And because he's on the IL, so there's a whole bunch of...
Yeah, there's a weird thing. So,
he
was just put on the injured list, like, right before this, like, I think on Friday or something. He was just put on the injured list. He dislocated his finger, like, two of his fingers, and he was put on the injured list. And we were kind of talking about this recently, like, can you, you know, suspend someone on the injured list? And I think the answer is no, but I'm not
sure. I don't
think
so.
I think that like the idea is that the suspension would kick in after his IL stint, but like if you're the Braves, like by the time this investigation concludes, like his like 10 days, at least like the minimum he would be on the IL, will be up anyway. So the Braves will just like quote activate him at that point. So they can start serving his suspension. Like, what are you going to do? You can't prove he's still hurt or not hurt. So like, if like, I assume that like, that's this type of shady shit that like any team would do. Probably they're just going to like activate him as soon as he's eligible. And then he'll start serving his suspension, even though he's probably still hurt because dislocated fingers don't heal in 10 days.
I mean, he originally posted it was going to be 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So we know it's going to be 6 weeks. So right, if they do that, well, no, they're blatantly lying.
Well, yeah, but like, I don't know. Like, can you legally make them keep him on the IL? Like, I don't know what, I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Yeah.
But either
I'm trying to look this up.
The whole thing's a mess.
And it seems like regardless of the like IL, not IL, what happens there, like this is one of those few cases that is straightforward enough that it is unlikely that this investigation will conclude anything except in the lengthiest suspension one could possibly hand down under this policy. Like, this is, I mean, Reyes got the worst, like, didn't he get the highest penalty that you could give out under this policy at the time?
For the first offense, I believe so. Yes. Cause he got 80 games.
Yeah.
Like, he got the like highest penalty you could give under this. And I feel like, even though obviously like I'm not trying to compare what he did versus what Ozuna did, I'm just talking about the evidence in the case. Like,
yeah,
the evidence is even stronger here because the police saw it.
I was going to say this all maybe made moot anyway, if he goes to jail.
Yeah.
Well, that probably won't be for a while though.
Yeah.
So MLB has to act before that.
Yeah. Yes. MLB will act sooner, but this is a case where we don't see this a lot, but this is a case where he might go to prison and who knows for how long. I mean, the charges upon which he was like the charges on which he was arrested carry a maximum penalty of 20 years. I don't think that's going to happen because, you know, he's a rich athlete.
I'm sure there'll be a plea bargain or something.
Yeah, something. But he could go to prison and for not a short period of time. And it would be warranted. Like, he, like, this is bad. This is really bad what he did. Horrible. So, baseball players, stop beating your wife challenge.
But it also made me, you know, the thought across my mind is, he was on the IL. Like, we don't know, like, other players, since they'll, when they get hurt or when this, you know, last year with the season being canceled, they're home more. So does that put more lives in danger? Like, if women have just been silently suffering and now he's home, I don't know. It just,
no, because that was part of the COVID pandemic issues. Like, one of the things they said was rising were domestic violence cases.
Yeah.
Because women were trapped with their abusers.
Yes.
I shouldn't just say women, because men are also victims of domestic violence. But
and like, children, yeah.
And children. Yes. But, like, basically, you know,
so victims, the victims were trapped with their abusers.
Yeah.
Victims were trapped with their abusers. And it created a really toxic situation. And, like, you know.
So that seems to be the case here, too.
Baseball players are no exception to this rule, where, like, if you're trapped with someone who has a tendency to be violent, and in this case, it seems like both members of this couple have a tendency to be violent, then that, you know, breeds toxic results, very bad results.
Yeah, and I don't know what the answer is or how to help or.
Yeah, I just hope, you know, I just hope baseball takes this seriously and that, you know, no one, like, after his suspension is up, no one tries to, like, pick him up on the cheap. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past baseball to do that. Any team to do that, I should say.
I mean, depending on how the charges roll out, assuming they're not going to be dropped. I don't think they're going to be dropped. But then again, you never know. It's all going to depend on the outcome of that. Legal consequences to this,
right?
So we'll see,
and we'll keep you you guys posted on that. But it's not good. It sucks.
No, not every, in the slightest.
We don't want to talk about this every week, but here we are. But the other big story this week, which didn't start as a baseball story, but it certainly leaks into baseball, is that Naomi Osaka withdrew from the French Open after she was fined and threatened with harsher sanctions for skipping her mandatory media obligations. She issued a statement on social media, which cited her, like, struggles with mental health and her need to, like, address those. And that's kind of why she wasn't talking to the media, because she has social anxiety and it's, like, really hard to deal with these media availabilities after matches. And, like, you know, it's kind of sparked this whole conversation about athletes and mental health and media availability and how athletes are treated by the media. And many came out in support of Osaka, including Serena Williams and most recently our very own Francisco Lindor, who put out a fantastic statement on social media, which I will read. Athletes are people first. Respect to Naomi for the courage it took to speak up for herself and for her mental health. As athletes, we have a lot of people looking up to us, and we want to be role models to them beyond the game. There needs to be more conversation and education about this to ensure that not only athletes, but all of us feel supported in our mental well-being. Well said, Francisco. Love it. And Francisco himself knows, knows that struggle.
Oh, Lord
knows, because ever since he came to the Mets, like, obviously, like we've mentioned, he's played gold glove defense and been an absolute joy to watch on the field. And obviously he's smiling all the time. Love his personality. He's so great to have around. I love him. But he hasn't lived up to expectations with the bat. And obviously the vultures are circling around him, because when you make as much money as he makes, you attract the ire of the New York media. And so he knows what it's like to have to face that attention and have to deal with that and balance one's mental health on top of that and still perform as an athlete. So it's really good that he came out in support of Naomi, especially because, like, in this case, it's very different than Lindor and even Serena Williams, because in this case you have a very young athlete of color, and it's predatory the way that people like her are treated by the media.
Well, and also it's kind of voyeurism too on, like, the media's part. Like, we saw it after the poor kid hit Pilar in the face. Like, why does he have to talk to the media? It's probably, like, one of the worst thing days of his professional career. He seriously injured somebody. He was broken up about it.
De-stressed, and that's an understatement.
Yeah, and you know, now the poor kid is back in the minors. He's been bad since then, so it's like, what do we need to hear from this kid? What are we gaining from making this kid talk about the worst moment of his professional career?
And I mean, I feel that way about a lot of players after they've suffered a hard loss or a bad play that's affected the game. Like, I don't want them to talk to the media immediately after that. Like, give them some time to process this and then, ask if you have to. Personally, I don't think they even have to ask. Things like that, to me, speak for themselves, especially body language afterward. And it feels very invasive to ask them about it, period. Not just immediately after the game. But again, that's my opinion. People will disagree with me on that. So, but it's just a whole, it adds so much unnecessary stress. And this is a particular problem in New York where there are so many reporters from different outlets commenting, asking the same questions. And that was one of Osaka's complaints, was that she's hearing the same questions over and over again. And that's, we hear it on the post game every night. The reporters are asking like some form of the same question. And it's like, he just answered that. So,
and even with Lindor too, it's like, how many times can you say, yeah, I'm struggling?
Exactly.
He knows.
How many different ways can he say it? Just like, how many different ways can he say, like, I want to be called Francisco, not Frankie. I've said this like 3 times.
Yeah.
Like
I think the Diamondbacks called him Frankie yesterday on their broadcast.
No.
They just have a modicum of respect for them as human beings, not just.
I mean, they don't. Like,
no.
Like, this goes back to Matt Harvey, too.
Yes.
Calling him spoiled and then completely making fun of when he had the, I think it was like the, was it a urinary tract? He was having a bladder issue. I think.
It was clots. And
they were making so many
jokes.
So like classless.
Yeah.
And then you're shocked he doesn't want to talk to you after that.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And that was like, and that was right before the thoracic outlet syndrome. And they kept hounding him and kept hounding him. And eventually he just said like, I think he even used the F word at some point. He said like, yes, I don't want to fucking talk about it. And like, people got really mad about that and like called him spoiled and the whole thing, but like, I'm like, how do you blame him? I wouldn't want to talk to them. They're asking him the same questions over and over. Like, why do you suck now, Matt? Because I have thoracic outlet syndrome. Leave me alone.
And especially when you're dealing with that injury and the mental and physical repercussions of that, and you're trying to process that yourself, let alone trying to deal with the public pressure.
Yeah, like, his career could be over. Like, at the time, I mean, he ended very well could be. I mean, he's back on the field, but he's clearly not the same. Like, let him grieve for that too. Yeah. There was a loss there. He was never going to be the same pitcher. And there's a level of grief that comes with that.
I mean, right. Especially when he was so elite in 2013 and 2015.
Yeah. And that's all he knew. Like, and you saw it on the mound. His body language was completely different from that pitcher. Like, he was like, he dared you to get a hit off of him. And then all of a sudden it looked like he couldn't get off the mound fast enough. Like, when Terry would come out to get the ball, he would be like already half off the mound. Like, I need to get out of here. Like, he was a broken man and it was sad.
And I mean, I think like, aside from the physical part of it, the mental part was that the media had built up this Dark Knight personality and focused on him and was writing, especially in 2013, they were kind of like stoking his ego by doing I think it was the Sports Illustrated article and then the body issue. And then they were just as quick to tear him right back down.
Which they're doing with Lindor now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cespedes, they did with Cespedes. They're doing it with Lindor now. Like, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated going into the season, on the cover of every magazine. And now they're like, shoving the mic in his face. Francisco, why do you suck now? Like,
yep.
Like, he knows.
He knows, like, he's not playing well.
back off. Just back off.
How many, really,
a little bit.
How many different, like, I'm adjusting my swing quotes do you need?
Exactly. Like, I guess they have jobs to do, but they're not really asking in-depth questions here either.
Right. Like, they're not doing the actual analysis of, like, his swing path and things like that. They're not. They're just asking him why he sucks now. And, of course, predictably, bringing it back to Osaka and the baseball connection here. So somebody wrote a really trash column, and when they tweeted it out, they wrote, Naomi Osaka is now just another diva. She was going to be so much more. Mental health is a serious issue. Hijacking that to avoid talking to annoying reporters, not good. My column. And of course, who quote tweets that agreeing with it? None other than John Heyman, who said, good to see someone call out Osaka, who's coming off as just another spoiled star. Where have we seen that refrain before from people like Heyman? Cespedes, Harvey. It's no surprise that these are the exact same people doing this to a young woman of color in tennis. Like, who's elite? The fuck out of here.
Who's elite in her sport?
In her sport. The best that there is in the sport. Like,
And also, like, you could be an elite athlete in the world and just get anxiety having to talk about it. Like,
yeah.
It's a whole different.
People think that there's a certain threshold of success and that you have the success, you no longer have feelings.
Right.
Yeah. Or you're not a human.
You're not human. You're not supposed to have negative feelings.
Or when you make a certain amount of money, you're not allowed to be human anymore either. Like, but when people boo Lindor, it's like, why? He sucks. He's making money.
He's making $340 million.
He knows.
He knows that. And the second he said that, he was just like, I have 340 million reasons to, like, work hard. So,
yeah. he didn't wake up and because you booed him, he was like, wow, I've been having a bad season. Good thing they booed me. I never would have known otherwise. Like, they know.
Big thanks to Joe from Queens.
I mean, I think in the other frustrating part is that we're like, the fans are so offense focused that they don't notice his elite defense.
Oh, they'll cheer that. No problem. And then be like, he's contributing. He literally
every time
just
he turns a double play, it's like, and then then he strikes out. Boo.
Well, and also I find it funny. Everybody's like, oh, yay, Narco. I love Diaz. It's like, you didn't last year. You didn't the year before. You were killing him on social media.
You were calling him a bum every day.
Yeah. Like, oh, you lost this Kelenic. I love Jerry Kelenic. I can't believe this. Kelenic's going to be a star, and we have this bum worst trade in the history of the franchise. And I was like, oh, Narco, hooray.
Oh my god, I love the voice you just said that in. I shouldn't be laughing, but that was a great voice.
I mean, am I wrong?
No, because I like that is still a constant theme in the Amazing Avenue comments. So that trade was horrible.
Well, then don't enjoy Diaz. I'm sorry. You don't get to partake in the Narco enjoyment.
You don't get to dance around to Narco.
No. And Kelenic's batting like 120, so take a million seeds.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh god. And I'm following along on the live thread right now, and it's more bad Francisco comments. And someone says they're calling him Frankie until he starts hitting.
See, again, it's dehumanizing a player. That's not his name.
I'm just going to say this is the game thread where reactions are live and visceral, but still.
That's not his name. Like, what's your name? I'm going to call you something else.
I'm going to call you Bob.
Yeah.
Until you stop pissing me off.
Okay, Bob.
All right, Bob.
Until you stop being a shithead, I'm going to call you Bob.
You're annoying, Bob.
The dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, I just... God.
Like, you can just make up stuff. Like, see, that's the other thing. It's like people feel like they have ownership over these athletes. But, I mean, they're still human. Like,
what have you done for me?
Yeah, like, you don't own the team. The only person who can, like, really complain is Cohen.
Did you call Cameron Maben May the entire time he was here because he wasn't hitting? Like, are you going to call him something else? Like, I'm just so confused about, like, why this specific phenomenon. Like, I'm not going to call you by your actual name until you start hitting. That's the weirdest thing ever. What is wrong with you? His name's Francisco. Just call him Francisco. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
Holy crap, man.
Rude and dehumanizing again.
It is dehumanizing. Yes. Again, like, these people don't see these athletes as human beings or individuals.
Or that, yeah, like you said, like, these athletes owe you something because they accepted a paycheck.
Yeah.
Like guess what? Ticket prices aren't going to go down if they didn't sign Francisco Lindor.
Right.
Yeah. The ticket prices would have stayed the same. And also, it's not the Wilpons anymore. Cohen can just buy anybody else. Like, any other free agent, you can be like, okay, cool. So I don't understand what Francisco Lindor's paycheck has to do with anything.
It doesn't have to do anything to do with anything. But yeah, so, like, this will be a continued discussion on this podcast because mental health is so important and not discussed enough in sports, because sports are, like, this hypo, like, masculine, like, tough it out culture, and that extends to, like, everywhere, even women's sports, as we've seen. So we're going to keep talking about this from various angles on different episodes of the podcast because we think it's really important. But shout out to Naomi Osaka for speaking her truth, and happy to see Francisco Lindor support that. It's good.
Sparking that discussion, because it's a legitimate discussion that needs to be had.
Exactly.
I mean, these athletes go to the best trainers and take care of their bodies. Why wouldn't, you know, mental health is just as important. If you're not there mentally, how can you compete?
Exactly. And I mean, we've seen that with other players who might not be as visible, but, like, this is also just a high pressure environment. These are guys that are at the top of their craft and are feeling pressure to begin with. So add the pressure of the media to it. Woof.
Especially New York media, as we've seen.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I mean, players have said that about New York too. The media is just a lot more intense here.
Yeah, so we will keep talking about this on future episodes, but, you know, shout out to Naomi. But in the meantime, mm-hmm. we will end this podcast like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, I hinted at it. I went to my very first doubleheader on Thursday.
Yay!
I mean, I had already bought tickets because I wanted to play hooky and skip out on work and turn it into a long weekend. So I took Thursday all the way through Monday off. And
very nice.
So I'd already had tickets for that game. And then, of course, Wednesday night got rained out. And I was like, yes, I get to see Stroman now. And that was one of my goals for the year, was to see Stroman, see Jake. Jake is still a goal. But I also got to see Narco,
which is awesome.
I was like, I got my first live Narco. it was awesome. And they shockingly won both games. Like, after they won the first, and I was like, okay, Stroman pitched beautifully, and yeah, I think they only scored on a Peraza home run. So yes. It's like, all right, cool. Diaz shut the door very easily. And then game two, Lucchese started, and he warms up to the Sopranos theme, which is amazing.
Love
and
that.
This is, I've been to three games this year. I've seen Lucchese pitch twice.
Oof.
But he was good. He was actually really good in both of the games that I went to. Yeah, and they ended up winning the second game. I saw the start of the Billy McKinney era. I took a picture of number 60 in right field, and he was really good. Like, he made a lot of catches because we sat in a fully vaxxed section, which was good. You could take your mask off. It was more, I was actually, for a Thursday afternoon game, like, there was a lot of people there. Like, our vaccinated section was almost almost completely full, because they leave one seat in between pods, I guess.
People just want to get out at this point.
Yeah, and you could take your mask off, so it was weird. I was like, I see people. Like, there's faces. People have, like, more to their face than just eyes.
I was thinking about one of my coworkers at the library. She's brand new. She's hired in August, and I have not seen the bottom half of her face yet.
No, it's so weird.
But, I'm gonna be so freaked out when I see it next week.
Yeah,
if she's not wearing her mask.
Yeah, no, you really do. You've just kind of adjusted to it. It's weird, but yeah. It was an absolutely beautiful day. It was like 80 degrees. Two Mets wins. I'm 3-0 in Mets games this year. I got my ice cream and a helmet. Like, yay! it was just the perfect day. And so that's my walk off win.
That's a fantastic walk off win.
Yeah, that's awesome. It was a really good day.
Kellyanne, what is your walk off win?
Okay, so I have two. I'm cheating. So the first one is that I finished my applications to library schools.
Yay!
So I'm very excited about that, and I'll hear decisions in a few weeks. That's not nerve wracking. I have an interview next week, next Wednesday. And my other one, the more important one, I am visiting Allison and Michael in a couple weeks to see the double header against the Nationals on the 19th. I'm very excited. I'm very excited to see them and hang out with both of them. I haven't seen you guys in a while, so I'm very excited.
Although I don't know if this is a controversial take. I kind of like this of it ending double headers.
I like
it's a lot different in person. It really, like, it's then you're like, I don't know if I'll stay for the second game, but then you're like, oh wait, it's seven innings, I can do this.
It's that I like them in smaller amounts. I'm just gonna be worried that they have so many in such a short span of time.
Yeah
I don't know.
We did like the fifth inning stretch both times, and then like you look up, it's the sixth inning. It's like, oh wait, Stroman can finish this game. He didn't, but yeah, your whole concept of the game gets thrown off in doubleheaders. But yeah, I kind of like them. I don't know if that's controversial.
It totally
is. I'm fine with them during during COVID times, and like, but like I hope they don't stay, because like they're gonna be so much rarer like after COVID that like it won't make sense anymore to me. But like, also I don't know, I like, it's easily one of the things that annoys me the least. Like, I would easily give that up. Like, I will easily be like, okay, I will take seven inning doubleheaders forever if you just get rid of the damn runner on second base.
Yes. Second. Oh my
God. I will take that.
I will take that trade in a second.
Away. Yeah. I think the other thing about the seven innings is it gives the teams playing them a slight bit of an advantage, because seven innings, you don't necessarily need to use your bullpen.
No, it really does save the bullpen. It makes the difference.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives an advantage to those teams playing them.
Yeah. But my walk-off win is, well, it's the same as Kellyanne's, the second half of Kellyanne's. She's coming down, and we're going to the Saturday to the doubleheader Mets-Nats game, going to two games in one day. Woo! I'm so excited for that. It's a day-night doubleheader, so they're separate admission. So there's gonna be a break in between. We're gonna be able to like go to the brewery across the street from the ballpark, just have a whole afternoon. It's gonna be so nice. I like can't wait for it. I'm so excited. I really needed this, because I was like super bummed out, because I was supposed to go to my first game at Citi Field since July 2019 over the weekend, and it was Sunday's game, and that got rained out, and I was really sad. Like, we drove all the way up from DC, and I was just so upset. Like, I was like in tears. I was like, why
did I have to
play the game? This was gonna be my first game, and I was so disappointed and heartbroken. So I needed to buy tickets to like three more games to make up for it. but yeah, I mean, like, it's not like I'm gonna be not going to baseball games this year. Like, we're going to the Mets O's game at Camden Yards coming up on June 8th, and then we're gonna go to the series in DC, obviously. And we're also trying to go on July 5th during July 4th weekend. We're trying to go to that Monday game on July 5th. Which I'm gonna try to trade, like, because now I obviously have like credit for another game, since my game got rained out. So I think I'm going to try to trade for that July 5th game, see if we can pull that off. I've yet to do it, but we'll figure it out.
I also just realized that the Nationals Park will be the first non-city park I've ever been to.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, that's exciting.
Nats Park is great.
So I hope Nationals. Okay. I was going to say, I hope Nats Park is great.
It's good. Yeah. I would say it's a solid ballpark. It's not Camden Yards, but it's a solid ballpark. Okay. So yeah, I mean, like, I'm still kind of bummed that, like, my first baseball game back, like, since the pandemic won't be at Citi Field, but, you know, Camden Yards is the next best thing in my view. So that'll be fun. So I'm very excited for all my upcoming baseball games to kind of like ease the sorrow of me missing that Mets game getting rained out. So, but I'm going to many games, so I'm not going to be sad about it. It's fine. But my other like kind of smaller walk-off win that I kind of thought of on the fly, because Linda was talking about seeing the lower half of people's faces. I met my coworkers for the first time in real life last week. So that was really fun. We went to happy hour like on Thursday. And I like, my branch is small. It's just me and two other people and our boss basically. So it was like the two other people in my branch and I went to happy hour to sell it. One of them got engaged recently, which is very exciting. So we went to like sort of celebrate and also to be like, we can see each other in real life. Like I've been at this job for almost a year now and I've never met my coworkers. So I got to meet them for the first time in real life. So that was really fun. I had a great time. Like they're really awesome. Like I had no doubt, like I get along with them great over Zoom. So I had no doubt that we would get along fine in real life, but it was still very nice just to be able to like see them and hug them in real life. That was nice.
Aww.
That's fantastic.
So that's my other walk-off win. I also cheated and picked two. But you know, why not? I needed two to balance my sad girl moment about the game being canceled. So, yes. But
while you're
waiting your way through the next Mets rainout, you can go to amazonavenue.com. Check out all of our fantastic content. I got player meters every week. We got game recaps after every game. We've got Mets morning news for you every morning. Various analysis, player analysis, etc. Go to amazonavenue.com for all of that content. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at PetitePhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And you, Kellyanne?
I am at LRBELLARE BEE.
Follow the show on Twitter. Follow each of us on Twitter. You should subscribe to this podcast, Amazing Avenue Audio, our entire suite of awesome pods, wherever you get your podcasts from, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.